Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Keith Guberman, the CEO of Programmatic Mechanics. Progmatics, or as the intro into the show, you'll get it's Progmatics, Progmatics. It's debatable, which is an interesting conversation. Today's show is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Had a good email with its CEO and founder literally just this morning, Jason, who's built an unbelievable company that, I mean, honestly, I think most of the founders, we talked about it on the show, most of the founders aspire to be what ActiveCampaign has built. So as a Chicago homer, I'm a huge fan, but I think you would like it too, as 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for marketing by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. As mentioned, today's Programmatic Mechanics, Progmex, founder and CEO Keith Guberman on the show to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, anywhere from what is an entrepreneur versus what is a bullshitpreneur? I don't know. I just made that word up. What makes for a good brand, and is there something behind the brand that really like is telling about the company? I kind of think there is. I think there's a lot of businesses out there that are built on like the idea is we provide programmatic advertising, we provide mechanical solution, and then the name just kind of is what it is, and you build a great business. And I think when you see stories like that, it's very telling about the founder, and it's very telling about the kind of business they are. They're usually a no bullshit business. It reminds me of my friend Peter Rahal from RX Parts. You know, no bullshit. Two ingredients, success, done. So great show about that, and obviously you learn a whole bunch about how to use advertising and sort of the secrets behind the advertising industry, because there's a lot of them. Most people pay a fortune, and they don't really get all that much in return. And this is a solution to that. If you like this episode, you will almost certainly like the Cloud Bakers episode of Mitch Greenwald, which I did some time ago. It's on technori.com, or of course, you could just follow Technori Podcast on WGN Radio, Technori on WGN, Technori on Apple Podcasts, Technori on Spotify, on Google, anywhere you listen to it, you can get that. This is my conversation with the CEO and founder of Programmatic Mechanics, Keith Guberman. We were just debating on this Progmex.
All right, really make any sense.
No, I was like, we're going to start right here with this. I got to understand this, because we got into it, and I was like, it's not. You would look at me funny if I said it's Programmatic Mechanics, but people do this to names all the time, and I'm always like, do you just change it because it just sounds better? Because Progmex maybe doesn't sound as. Where does this? How do you?
Started the company, I really hadn't thought about much more than just what we were going to do.
Yeah.
And the angle I was taking was that if people were buying this somewhat terribly dubbed programmatic advertising, that I wanted to put the word mechanics in there.
Yeah.
I thought it had like a nice grittiness to it. It says operator. It says like there's a lot of companies running like high margin, lying through their teeth.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Don't worry.
Right.
We'll
so I wanted that. To come in and be like, "Hey, we're just a mechanic. Just here to fix the problem. What's the problem you got? I can kind of fix it
for
you."
So, I like the name. I just think it's funny because we got so many companies that come on here and they usually abbreviate, or they come up with another name, which is a whole other story. And there's always a deviation. And like I look at Dave, who I obviously put this together for us. I went to college with him. Like Progmex. He's like, I think it's Progmex, but everyone else, including the founder, is going to say Progmex, and where am I on this? I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm just everybody's friend here. That's all I'm doing.
Well, so, it was like, I'm going to go with this really long, ridiculous name.
Yeah.
Okay, my last name is Guberman, so I live my life dealing with, like,
you're used to it.
Cumbersome names.
Yeah.
But then I was, like, filling out, like, make a website for it and make email addresses. I was like, I'm going to ask somebody to write to kguberman@programmaticmechanics.com.
You could have done him a favor and got rid of the K.
That's a very, very
Or the Guberman. You could have just done like, you know, Kevin.
But
it is your company.
Yeah, right.
You can take the first Kevin.
Keith could be Keith. I wanted to scale it appropriate, quote unquote. So that was the real impetus. Was I was like, I can't ask somebody that's a ridiculously long email address.
So then
I started cutting it down, and I was like, this is like, do we tell people it's like Progmex, but it's with a P? I've tried different things over the years.
This is a funny exercise that it happens on this show organically all the time, and I mean it makes sense because like you know, Technori, what the fuck is Technori, right? It was a sushi roll. Exactly, I don't understand what's going on here. So I've been through this. But we've had so many companies on here where, like, there's a million sides to this, but usually the operator founders who are like, it's not just, oh, I got a funny idea, but, like, they really know they're the builder of it. Like, they're the operator, mechanic. They come into it very much like you, and one company comes to mind, like K-Cura, and turns into Relativity. Their primary product was Relativity, and Andrew was sitting there like, well, we had to come up with a brand because, you know, the business itself isn't sexy as it is, so, like, we need something. And then it's like, well, in Chicago locally, as we're hiring, people know K-Cura, but every single customer we have uses our Relativity platform, which they know the name of. And it's a similar story with not direct competitor, but kind of direct. It's like Centro. Like, I sit here with Sean Rigsecker, and he's like, oh, it's Centro and whatever, and he's like the brandiest of branders that ever branded. Exactly. But he comes up with the platform. He's like, well, it's Basis, and it's Basis by Centro. And I remember sitting in, we were in the old studio, and I remember sitting here, and he's defending the Basis by Centro thing. And I'm like, dude, I'm a huge fan, but I got to tell you, the two names thing, the two brand, like, dude, you either are Centro and you just roll, or you Basis and that's your thing. The whole this by that thing, it's just a throw off. So I totally get, and then you get to the companies who like shorten it up, and this is where you're at. And I guess I think it's interesting to talk to founders like you, and not that I love Sean, not that I'm not dissing my man Sean, but Andrew from Relativity, because they're so what's the word? I'm like, it's not just operator. There's like, they're like tacticians. They felt a problem. They built a solution almost for themselves, and like almost edification to show that they could have done it better than whatever they were trying to serve up before. And then they're like, all right, guys, I'm going to build a company around this. And then they go to a whiteboard and like, what do we do? And you're like, we serve up programmatic advertising. Okay. It's programmatic. So like, put that on the board. And like, how do we, what's the value prop? How do we convey? Well, it's a mechanics. Like, we bring in the mechanics behind how it's done. Oh, okay. And they throw it on, and then they build this entire billion-dollar empire on top of what we do. And the brand thing is just sort of like, whatever, man. Just like,
pfft. So Centro is really a quote-unquote direct competitive set to us. And we, of course, to elaborate on your point and to fall victim to the same exact story you just told, we also have built a platform called Pontiac, which is by, of course, Programmatic Mechanics. Naturally. But what happened with them and with a lot of companies, I don't know the relativity guys, but it probably similar to what happened to us, is that we got into a business that's very difficult to break into.
Yes.
So service advertisers or advertising agencies is, and you know, this is why I'm in Chicago hanging out with Dave, is like, this is very difficult.
Yeah.
You have to be different, but you have to be kind of the same. You have to talk their language, which could be any variety of how people talk about advertising. So Centro came in more off the newspaper back end.
Yes.
We came in from being like, hey, you're doing this programmatic thing. We're just going to be a team that's, quote unquote, will fix your problems, mechanics, strip out some of the flash.
Yep.
And we both ended up in a very similar place where we had what's labeled as a service business that was profitable, making money. So then you have this idea as an entrepreneur, quote unquote, or whatever, as a founder. You're like, okay, so the service business, how much can I sell that for? Not much.
Yeah.
Services business is worth like 1.2 times revenue.
Yeah.
That's not top line.
Need to be
revenue.
A tech platform marketplace, otherwise this is no bueno.
There's no bueno. So then they did exactly, they raised and then went and bought the Canadian Site Scout and rebranded. Yep. We've built a tool on top of AppNexus, which is a scaled player called Pontiac.
Yep.
But it's the same thing. We have like a platform that is a, quote unquote, and ours has no minimums, and I know that theirs does different things for different people, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, we are basically doing kind of the same thing, because I think that, I don't know Sean personally, but I would bet that he'd be like, well, at least I could try to sell that one. Whereas the services company is just not, it's not that valuable to a buyer.
Yep.
So
I'll wink to what you said previous about that.
Yeah. It's like, it's the balance of like, well, now we have a platform, they have a platform that's like, you could, hey, advertiser, Mike's Fish Fry, you could buy ads using this platform to do it. You could also trust us to do it for you. But that's kind
of, I think there's
natural progression for a company like this where it like, makes money, can't go public, not that much money, so you start investing in something else.
Yeah, no. And I think there are unique differences. I don't want to stay on just the comp there, but there are unique differences, I think, to your business, and from what I understand of it from talking to Dave, sort of the application and who you work with and like how you integrate with those groups and how you help them. There's a lot of advisory. There's a lot of us kind of showing you the ropes and letting you do this versus like, we're not just a platform where you would stumble upon it and be like, oh, I'll just put buys in and call it a day.
Right.
There's, which changes the way that you present the business to the, like who you're talking to. Like it wouldn't be out there talking to the marketing department of a company, like saying you should check us out and then adios. This is like, you should meet with us and let us show you what we can do and let us run some stuff with you. And then once you get the hang of it, you can do your own thing. But like, there's a lot more handholding, I feel like, which is also lends itself to like, obviously Central is not B2B or B2C, it's B2B, but it feels like a consumer-y type product for B2B versus you, what I understand is more of a truly B2B.
I think that we're mostly engineers and data scientists in the advertising world. And that's my background.
Yep.
They are fantastic with the branding thing.
Yeah.
And the big splash, the beautiful work, just not our style.
Well, yeah, that's the beauty of this conversation is
exactly
the market is fucking huge.
It's huge. We go in and people be like, I tried programmatic advertising. And we'll be like, every day in just Illinois, there's 800 million to a billion ad opportunities to buy.
Yeah.
Okay. Some people run 100 mobile device ads an hour in some game. There's a lot of ads to buy. So if you bought $2,000 worth of a $100 million market a day or whatever, a week, if you spent $2,000 and you didn't get any results, you could have very well just bought ads that don't work.
Yes.
So that's kind of the story that we have to tell is be like, have you tried this? Yeah, we tried it. It doesn't work. That's kind of the angle.
So
like,
I want to deconstruct that.
And we'll fix kind of, you had to buy these $2,000 worth of ads.
You said two things in the last couple of minutes that I want to jump in and they'll be the butt of this conversation. The first one is what you just talked about, which is, and I'll tee it up in a different way. The other one is the entrepreneur, founder, whatever you call it. Cause that's a whole other thing that like, it just irks the shit out of me when I see some of the guys who come in here like, well, I'm a serial entrepreneur and founder CEO. It's like, dude, give me a break. Yeah. Like, come on.
Are you great at raising money? Are you great at?
That's we'll come back to that. We're going to circle back to that. So the part that I really am fascinated about, both curiously and selfishly, is having been in this space with the show and with media in general and a career sort of in the media space and advertising and how it's evolved and how people can create experiences using, you know, in-home, out-of-home, blah, blah, blah. I have been the negative beneficiary of a lot of bullshit ads and a lot of people going, you know what? We're going to pass on doing a deal with you guys and advertising and the stuff because we did this ad buy with so-and-so and it just netted nothing. And I'm like, you had canned air. Like, I'm really sorry to be the one to tell you this, but they sold you on everything that had the highest margin markup for them and it had zero benefit to you. You didn't know. And I'm sorry, but now I'm the one who has to pay the piper because you won't buy from me. You kind of alluded to like the bullshit version of this.
You nailed it on the head.
Let's dive. I want you to dive right into it and pick them apart and I will just continue to throw dirt.
Okay. Yeah. Fabulous.
Yeah. So this is the show is for you.
Perfect.
I'm going to start calling you. What's another name I can give you? You got Keith, you got Kevin, Steve, fucking Steve here.
Bobby.
Bobby's here. How do we sell ads, Bobby?
Well, like, you don't know the actual value of an advertisement. Okay. That makes it a whole different world than milk.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of milk produced every day. There's a lot of farms. There's exchanges. There's ways that they sell it to each other and Kraft buys a tremendous amount. It's milk. They know how much milk should cost. But an ad, you have no idea what an ad should cost. Nobody really knows what an ad should cost. There's ways how we can define how much we want to pay for
them. We think it should be.
We have, right. Yeah. But like, I've served ads for B2B companies. I had a LinkedIn ad. One ad on LinkedIn that turned into like a multi-million dollar contract for them. One ad. It cost 0.7 cents.
Yep.
Okay, so like, well, that was a good one. It was probably worth more than 0.7 cents.
Yeah.
But in aggregate, it's very hard. So that's been the same game or joke since this all started like 100 years ago with newspapers or a guy put a sign on his newspaper stand and charged for it. So ad agencies are built to try to figure out how to find the value in media. And ultimately the compensation model for an agency became a percentage of how much media you managed, which it inverse incentivizes the buyer to want to spend more money on the behalf of a brand.
Yep.
So that, combined with a million other things, creates a world where every type of new media is sold at ridiculously high margin, just with a story or a flash,
yep,
or the WeWork IPO idea of, like, we promise you the world.
Yeah.
And you look at it and you're like, wait, these are just like newspaper ads, or they're just banner ads in yeah, a new format. So
so true.
It's
like
you get venture capital coming into this market. I'm in the programmatic space, you're in the audio space, but it's like all of a sudden they're throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at this stuff, and that creates the need for higher margin and better returns and more salespeople promising a bunch of BS. And that's what we come up against, just like you. It's just like those guys are well funded. They take these people out. They buy them sunglasses. They buy them jeans. They take them to games, big games, box seats.
We do
seats.
All the same shit, man.
We do too, but not the box seats,
right? Yeah. Well, no, we do the boxes. Well, we do the boxes, the sunglasses, Ellison sunglasses. What other stuff? We dinners. We got all kinds of shit, man. We give you Fiji, you know?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, we do what we can.
But that's kind of the joke, is that, like, when you're selling some honest inventory or you're selling some, like, honest service, you got to just bear through that stuff.
I think the problem for me with most of this has been like, you really hit it on the head when you talk about like what's the value of one ad. This one ad delivered this deal that was immense, and it, like, so like I was not going to shit on sponsors, but I'm going to, like,
good.
I talk to companies who are like, oh, we spent $100,000 in sponsorship, we did the sponsorship with X, Y, and Z in Chicago, and it's comparable to you, and it was great, but like, we got one deal. It was really like a huge deal. Paid for the sponsor 2-3. So like, duh, we re-upped. Then the second time we didn't get anything. So we came back and I'm like, we're going to be less, but like, you know, we still want a partner. And I was like, I got to deconstruct this right in front of you, because it just annoys me. You got lucky with the first one. They have nothing behind the scene to actually convert anything for you. It's complete chance that someone who you met in the networking event happened to be there, and you happened to be there, and you struck up a conversation, and they were a buyer at the right time that you were a seller, and it just worked out. Then you re-upped because you thought, we're going to get it again. And it was luck, so you didn't. And then you actually decreased your chances of getting lucky a third time when you reduced the amount you're putting in because you had less exposure. So you're even less. The whole thing was bullshit. What I looked at is, like, on our show, we have, let's say we have 10,000 listeners to this episode. We might also have an episode after this that has 215. But if the person of two people in that 215 are working at Kraft or wherever, and they were like, oh shit, I didn't know about this company I hired, that's all it's about. So how do we, like, my objective for people we talk to is like, how do I target specifically who you want only and remove the noise? And I don't sell you shit you don't want and you don't need. And they don't want to have that conversation because it gets, I mean, some do. But most don't, because it's like above their pay grade. They have a certain amount of budget they want to get rid of. They want to spend this money to do this. They don't really want to be responsible for the failure. They don't want to rock and roll up and do the whole thing with you the whole time. They just want to, like, give you the money and you give me a lead, and then I can report that I got the lead and I get my money back. And it's like, if that's how this is going to go, every shark in the pool is going to come after you because you're an idiot.
Well, yes. And it makes it so that the people doing the mission, right,
yeah,
you delivering a episode of some interest, or
but we have the ability to pull some tricks that would greatly improve the likelihood, but they're not even interested in listening to that, because all the way up until I give you that pitch, they've already been soured and ripped off so many times that they would prefer to just go to an agency who they know is ripping them off and just sort of be like, well, you know, we did what we could.
Yeah, you gotta try to power through it. I mean, it's exactly like a million people said the same thing to me.
Exactly. Again, I think of you guys when I think of that, because it's like you have the ability to cut out all the bullshit,
well, exactly,
and get to it.
Exactly. And like, we, you know, ultimately, and again, this is just like sales 101 and like learning how to go meet 100 people, because it's not all the business that we've gotten and the way that my guys get business continues to be the same, which is you meet somebody who might be interesting and have something to do with this.
Yeah.
And then it's their cousin's friend,
yeah,
owns an ad agency in Omaha. Okay. It's not
Fredo.
Yeah.
Came to Omaha.
It has nothing to do with, like, we went in, we pitched our product. They, yeah, were like, this is the greatest product. It has to do with, like, figuring out who really needs help.
Yeah, yeah.
Who really is interested in doing the right thing. You have a great audience.
Yeah.
Okay. You should buy the sponsorship to promote, because my audience is great.
Yeah.
There might be a gem in there that is this deal.
Yeah.
There might not not be, but you don't waver in terms of what
well,
it
they,
is.
They want to report clicks. They just want to report like, oh, we had eyeballs. Like the worst ones is when we were in the event space. It was like, how many people attended?
Attended. That saw this.
Okay, great. Who are they? Oh, I don't know.
Who did you meet with? How many people came into the store? Well, we can use different services that will tell us that these people came into the store that you're in based on your mobile phone firing off some ads. It's like, you know, I don't know if this is so totally accurate or, you know, a grain of salt. And then you'll get some buyers who are like, well, these guys report on it for me. They said 450 people come in. And I'm like you. I'm like, I don't know. Really? Is that you're just going to take their word for it? Did you interview the people that came in that saw
Did you?
Ad?
That's the best. Did you follow up with them? Did you meet with them? Oh, well, we haven't yet. Oh, so that lead's fucking dead. Like, it's so old.
Somebody's making up numbers and selling it to you.
And like, how? So you build this business. I mean, when was the business started officially?
So we just had our end of our sixth year. So January 1st, 2014.
Okay, so 14. So you're coming up as the social media is like hitting its like
stride.
Absolute power stride and everybody's selling some shit.
Yes.
How do you get in with companies and say to them, there's a better way. We can do this differently. Like, how do you get in with a company and show them the value?
Usually, social, so for that period, and there's still certain places that are very, that turn over, quote unquote, very well, meaning that the response on ads you put there is still very high.
Yeah.
That's what Facebook had. It still has it roaring, but it was on en fuego 5 years ago, where you could put in $20 and it would print money for you through selling your shoes.
Yeah.
I can't. Nobody really could go in against that too hard. It was more about like, how are you doing that? You know, are you just shipping that off to a company that you don't talk to about how they're doing it? Like, you know, you put in $20 and got $200. Maybe you could have put in $10 and gotten $400.
There's a lot of mystery behind how it was done because they didn't want you to know how the sausage is made. That was kind of the trick.
Exactly, and our trick or what we've had successfully has gotten us some momentum is that we didn't take any funding.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have the ability to be like, you can trust us. We don't have some goal to hit to keep my founder, my investors happy. We could just try to do this with you transparently and make it work for you. We could be honest about
you mean
fees
you,
and all that
you won't
stuff.
Lie about ads inside of hospital rooms.
Like, exactly.
Like one
How
of the other companies
saw
in town
the
here
ad in the hospital and then book your hotel room. I don't know. I don't think that's going to. And it's about. It has to do with the time, okay? And this is the seventh year. We don't change the pitch. We don't change what we're doing. And that type of, like, longevity is paying off where, like, somebody 2 years ago could be like, whoa, I got a great group of people. And we were like, great. Call us if there's things that you are questioning or there's problems that we could fix.
Yeah.
But that's great that you're very happy. And one out of three of those within 5 years seems to be like, hey, actually, we would like to talk to you about buying Waze and Reddit only.
Yeah.
And we're like, we do that very well. Like, and then, you know, we'll get in like a good agency or with a good agency by just doing a good job. And they'll be like, hey, this is great. Like, can you also do our LinkedIn and put it into the same dashboard thing? Yeah. Oh, why don't you take Facebook from us too? We actually don't like the people we do it from. Like, we thought you loved those people, you said.
Nobody ever loves their vendors. They always say that when they're trying to defend away from buying you. And then as soon as they're like, truth be told, total asshole guy next door, no bueno. So your customers vary between agency, large corp. Who are your customers for the most part? Well, or who do you not even who are your customers? Who do you prefer to serve? Who do you feel like you serve the best?
Yeah, so with the self-service platform catering to smaller folks, we'll do literally small clients direct with one fish fry location. All the way to, we're in with some Fortune 500 companies, but they're ones that have several agencies doing different things and they use us to run the programmatic advertising. It's a niche.
So you do a nice job of knocking some margin out for them, I would imagine.
Well, exactly.
Have to have nearly the force behind it.
And then the core business is working with agencies that are doing good work that just either don't want to build out this division, have had trouble where they, you know, we're also, if you use us, you can't accidentally spend $100,000.
Correct. Yeah.
So like you protect yourself. So agencies of a certain size have always used us as the trading desk is kind of the term we use for, we'll move this money. You want to move $10,000 to next door on the app and try connected TV on Roku devices in 4 zip codes.
So how are you guys, like from an expert perspective, like targeting how are businesses using you guys? I don't mean necessarily the mechanics part of this, but like the actual performance. What about your business makes it more effective?
Well, I mean, you run the show. There's opportunities when taking investment from the correct group of investors is a brilliant decision on a business.
Yeah.
You can get huge returns. Just not the way that we did it.
Yeah.
It's just us running the business, trying to do a good job, keep it good, try to have a good work-life, quote-unquote, balance for the employees. Try to do a good job, make a good place to work, and have a good time. Yeah. I had some advisors, Dave Smith, who runs Media Smith on the West Coast. He looked at me when I started. He was like, "What do you want to do?" I was like, "I just want to have a nice life and not worry too much about things."
Yeah.
He was like, "Well, that's a good goal, because if you're trying to sell it for $100 million, that's really hard.
Yep.
But if you want to have a company that has good profitable years, some break-even years, and you just kind of roll with the punches, well, then that's obtainable."
Yeah.
So that comes all through in the amount of margin that we take on the media, which makes it more effective. It's not quite rocket science. It's that we're going to serve you the same thing that guy's serving you, but he's going to keep half of it in his pocket. We're going to serve like twice as many ads.
Yeah.
So the odds that the twice as many ads work, targeting is important.
Yeah.
All this is important, but I think we're probably going to perform better. We just have a lot more ads.
More volume.
Market.
Yeah. I totally get it. It's like when we talk to some of the people who we talked about trying to get in the show, I always try to start. I don't know if this is successful or not. You can tell me because you make this pitch 1,000 times more than me. I usually try to avoid getting into like the comparison part of this where it's like, oh, there's them. Who's your incumbent? Like whatever. It's like, it's really pretty simple. You're going to spend this much money because let's just say it's $5,000 because it's going to cost me this much money to get in front of who your customer is. We get to keep every dollar that we don't have to spend to drive the conversions to you. It's simple. If we don't get it, we have to spend all of it. So we're incentivized to fucking dominate. That is literally our life's blood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, so there's no hidden cost. There's no like, no. It's really simple. I use everything, including guys like you. Like I use everything I have at my disposal to make your money work for you. And that's it. And it's like, I think we're starting to get like turns on this where people are like, okay, I get it. Like I can take a trial on it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But like I look at like anyone who has an in-house agency or is sort of a lot of venture groups, the companies that are invested in by institutional have like their preferred agencies that they get kickbacks on. So they try to push every company into this bullshit, even though it doesn't even work. It doesn't even make sense. And I will be like, you can still do that. Give us a run. And what I can do is not be beholden to whatever price deal difference I got or upfront purchase I got. I literally can use a guy like you and go buy this, and then I can do some influencer marketing, and I can do some this, and I can do some hashtags. I can do all kinds of stuff. It gives us a lot of opportunities, and most of them, I don't think that they know how digital marketing works now. So I don't think that they know that there are options out there like what you do. Like I think a lot of the people in charge of it sometimes just are oblivious. They're like, well, our marketing department handles it, it's an agency. Yeah.
Advertising is just a fabulously fun market to be in.
Yeah.
Because you have your very large companies, and in retail, okay, the largest e-commerce retailer, Amazon now, takes a very, 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 very thin margin to drive enormous infrastructure for people around. You can't just build an e-commerce business and go competing with them.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. There's no way that the money makes any sense.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And it has to do with the revolution of the digital advertising with not just TV contracts flying around.
Yep.
The major ad agencies that are the quote-unquote dominance are generally not – this is not a blanket statement because there's definitely pockets that are brilliant. But they're generally like not doing the best job or charging the least amount of money.
Yeah.
So like it just leaves this open. And this is why advertising is great, because advertising agencies come out of everywhere. And they take different forms in the way that agency is like a blanket term too.
Yeah.
But every 20 years, every 10 years, every year, you read about an agency that got it to 500 people. And then those big guys paid the founders and got out. But it's like, fun. How did that company win all that business? Just like you're saying and I'm saying. They just came around. They're like, we do this well. You should trust us. Don't trust those guys. I like it. Then that person tells a friend. Then they tell another friend. And if you do it right, you get it pretty big.
It's funny. It's one of those things where there's only a few industries, I think, that this really is like a big thing. Insurance is another one. And it doesn't seem to make sense, but it actually does. The marketing, of insurance and reaching certain demographics is actually really difficult. And there's big brands with big power, but they get a reputation, and they have to because they're so big, but they have to get big in order to do what they do. And so they have a hard time serving like younger people. You look like CoverWallet got acquired for what, $260-70 million on a pretty small amount of money raised, and the multiple was insane. And at the end of the day, they did no underwriting. It was a marketing company. And the reason that is that case is that all of the big giants out there, and this is the same thing I feel like in the advertising agency, the vast majority of them deferred. They punted on learning digital. They just said, oh, we'll just outsource it, or we'll just hire some random agency to fill the gap because honestly, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And they just went with it. And insurance did the same thing. And there are billionaires and many, many, many times over millionaires who can line the streets, who started a company around the idea of, I'm going to get that target demographic by offering this one thing better.
Exactly.
Done.
Insurance is just a great story too, because one of the biggest independent ad agency in the world right now that has not sold or changed its ownership in its 27-year existence is Horizon Media. Horizon, his sell is he was a TV guy. Bill Konigsberg. He was a TV guy who sold in. He got Geico 15 years ago. He was like, yo, you buy $1 billion worth of TV.
Yep.
I will do it where you have no more of these trust transparency issues.
Yeah.
We'll just show you what goes on, and we'll just blanket the world with the Gecko.
Yeah.
And they're like, we'll take one of them.
I'm done with the Gecko sequel thing, by the way. The Geico / sequel, we really, like, I get it.
It's
how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? I get it.
Next. It's amazing how much they proliferate through TV, but it's kind of what you're nailing is like if the biggest insurance company in the world is just using a targeting strategy where they blanket everything, including Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Okay. Just blanket it. It's kind of the thing. If you can come to the table with a niche idea of how to make this a little bit more cost effective, it's obvious that the demand is there.
Totally.
The insurance companies need to try to reach these people. They become very high value lifetime customer if you get one.
Yep.
So a million. The insurance space blew up recently. Same with financial space. Yep. It's all these smart guys.
ClearCover just locally just raised 50 after they raised 40 after they raised 20.
Exactly.
Actually, as a random side note, I think Dave, who set this up, I think we actually did a campaigns course at Marquette together where I did the thing on the woodchuck beer. I think that was like the project we're working on. I don't know. And et cetera. There was some other. Were you in the class? He's in the class with Professor Carey or something. He's an old dude. I don't know. He's. My mind is a blur back in that day. So
Marquette?
Yeah, Marquette.
Chris Farley.
Yes.
I just noticed.
Yeah, he went to Marquette. Well, sort of.
That's a good one. Yeah.
He was there.
He was there.
He burnt a house down. That I know.
He was there.
He was there at a given point. I could argue very similar myself. I did get the degree, but that's debatable. Like, there was a lot of... Like, I remember my last classes, I was doing some negotiating. Like, all right, so here's the deal. I didn't do anything. We both know that. Wouldn't you feel better about passing me? Wouldn't that make your Christmas feel better than, like, you know, going to Christmas? Like, no, it'd feel pretty good giving you a D or an F.
Yeah, I skimmed by myself.
So that's our next topic. It's not the skimming by, but there's something to this. You made the comment about the founder, entrepreneur. I'm a serial entrepreneur, founder, CEO. That has such a bullshit line attached to it at this point when these people come on the show. Like, there are certain ones who I get it. I'm a founder, CEO. Like, it's a thing. They're proud of it, whatever. There are people who make things happen and they see shortcuts. And I don't mean that in a cheap way. They see a shortcut and they know exactly how to find the path of least resistance to it. And they cut out the bullshit. And those are the ones time and time again who succeed. The ones who come on the show are the guys like you who are coming like, yeah, wasn't trying to build an empire or become a billionaire. I mean, if it happens, that'd be awesome. And if I build a great company and some PE firm comes in and says, we'll give you $100 million for a piece of the business, I'm not going to say no. We're cash flow positive. It's great. But I'm not a founder, entrepreneur, blah, blah, blah. And I would love to know your backstory as you come into this, because you are like right in the, also with starting the timeline, you're right in the heyday of like the Silicon Valley founder bro.
Exactly.
And it's like, I'd love to know the story as you're starting the company, because I could see you meeting people, unless you were just heads down building this and never looked around. I could see people meeting like, dude, you got to put together a pitch deck and like all this shit. And you're like, or just build it, you know?
But. Yeah. So I studied engineering.
Yep.
And then I got into advertising in New York.
Okay.
Right at the moment when they would go from, hey, give me $200,000. We put an ad in Vogue magazine.
Yep.
And we mailed you the magazine with the ad torn out of it to prove that it was in the magazine that hit circulation, the tear sheet, to a time when all of a sudden it was how many ads ran on some website and this huge spreadsheets with 4.7 million as the number of ads that ran and how much money these yeah. different partners are paying us. So my engineering background led very well to that. So I did that. Condé Nast, publisher of Vogue.
Yeah.
Obviously.
That's how they got that flyer in
Yeah, that's
there.
How that's how I got that flare. And then went to an ad network, which is where I learned kind of the inner workings of how this ad stuff works some, yep. Which was in Silicon Valley, highly funded, went bankrupt. So I learned yeah. a little bit there about how that goes down. And then I went to an ad agency that was building a programmatic buying team. And I had a great team, and the company was great, and the agency was great, and they were doing great stuff. But I was 29 years old, and I was kind of like, I had met a guy who said, hey, I would help you start a company if you ever get angry at the person that you work for.
Yeah, I shouldn't
like, well, why
be
would I get angry at them? He's like, well, maybe they should pay you more. I was like, well, that's
a... Now I'm pissed.
That's an interesting take. And I was like, no, I'm happy. And then a year later, I helped them win a tremendously... I started doing yeah. the sales run. So I was not only operating, but I'm on the road. And it was here in Chicago. I went to a big company here, and I helped them win like a multi-million dollar test.
Yeah.
And I basically and was
you
like...
You paid for
I don't
the cab
really,
home.
I'm not a... I didn't have entrepreneurial dreams since I was a kid. I was just in a situation where I was like, well, if I'm going to sell it to this guy, and then I'm going to turn around and I'm going to execute all the media... Any reason I shouldn't just try to go do this myself?
Yeah.
And I did, and that was when I launched. And it was this time 6 years ago, I think it was maybe this day, that I walked into a shared workspace. Not WeWork.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the coolest. It was called The Alley. It was a private one in New York.
Yep.
And I walked in, and it was 200 entrepreneurs, you know, and you get all ages, all different levels of raises, and it was there.
All
I worked
wired
there.
In.
I started this there, and I had my head down trying to get meetings with agencies and do the job. But I couldn't believe some of the conversations I would overhear about kids starting apps to keep track of things that don't seem necessary, or different companies that had raised funding of different levels,
yeah.
nonprofits, the whole gamut. We're walking around this place, ticket measuring companies, and I got to, you know, just in like any workspace, you have like fun. You're like, hey, so what are you doing over here? And my interpretation was like, this is really the cool thing now is to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to me about how many people had bad or not worthy ideas, spending all their time trying to raise money, constantly throwing around the term entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You know, like a band on a new label that walks around and is like, I'm a rock band.
Yeah.
When the real
band. Oh, it was the new rock star. It's finally starting to like, I feel like the real... If you want to use the word entrepreneur, the real entrepreneurs, the ones that are, I just think mechanics, and like it's such a great term for it because that's what it is. They're finally turning their back on the bullshitters and be like, dude, no, I'm sorry. We had a room, a private founders dinner. You're not a fucking founder. You got an idea and you're selling some pitch deck.
Yeah.
If you tried to build a business, you'd find out in 3 months. And that's okay.
It's okay.
That it's not a good business. It's irresponsible to take money.
$3 million of people's
or more,
money. Or more.
To be like, oh, I get this thing. It's like, you could have done the minimalist amount of due diligence with an Excel sheet and a phone and found out this is a bad idea.
Right. And it's, that was
But that's not
the,
cool.
No, it's not cool. And like, you know, to keep the rock band analogy, you still have some bands that get to that label and are like, no, I'm still writing music. I'm still going to tour.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah,
nobody's business, and like make it so that
usually privately.
Well, exactly. And that's kind of the, you know, you get your flashy guys who make it quote unquote, and then they become, they're just obsessed with that aspect of it. And then you get people who like to build businesses.
Yeah.
Or,
and then there's a kind of a hybrid, which I feel like I fall into the hybrid because I'm like you. I got to be an entrepreneur. I didn't give a shit. I didn't know what that was. I didn't even know what that was like 7-8 years ago. Like, I don't I just was a guy who I think similar to you, not you recognize that you could do this yourself. Like if I just did it for you, I could just do this myself. I was like a person who just got jobbed. Like I did all this work. I did all this stuff for you. And then you just sort of left me in the lurch and I got screwed. And I was like, all right, well, that's never going to happen again. What's the difference between he and I? Oh, he owns it. Oh, that's it. Right. Okay. So I gotta own a piece. Then I'm not per se technical. I'm an operator in the sense of like, I sort of have the vision of how things go. I understand how businesses go. I know what they need to accelerate, but I know I'm not the guy to do certain things. So I build what's a kit car, you know, like you'd buy like a Cobra, but it's a kit, right?
Yep.
So I buy the Cobra. I clean it up. I polish it. It looks real good. Good vehicle, good brand. And then I go out on the road and try to find the people that can sit in the seats to make this thing ride. You're going to build me the engine. You're going to build me, you know, the exhaust. You're going to make this thing fly. You're, you know, so I'm not a person who's good at being on the front and then hiring 1,000 people. I'm the person who's like, I can build a core unit who can absolutely kick ass, and then I kind of move on to the next thing. And there's those guys, which I think they're just sort of, they're like gap filler, still entrepreneurs, but they can keep a business alive long enough to find someone like you who'd come in and go, oh, you found it, but you didn't do what you got to do to like...
Right. It could be one little thing. So I didn't do this alone.
Yeah.
My partner, he's 18 years old, my senior, Paul. And
yeah.
Paul is a true business operator.
Yeah.
And he's done it before.
Yep.
He managed 100-person teams. And I had limited experience managing, right? I was like fresh 30. But I mean that in the way that he kind of started with me, so it wasn't an outside
investment. Yeah, yeah.
But you need trusted partners, business partners, or properly incentivized.
Yeah, you got to like build that core unit.
Yeah, you have you can't get through it alone. Just the tough times, you need somebody to cry their shoulder. But like it's everybody's combo is different. Everybody, the way that they piece the pieces together is different. It always needs some assistance, whether it's documented on the equity agreement or if it's just a guy you meet for coffee. That I have a lot of advisors, I'd call them, not in paper, but people I meet that have done this before or done a piece of it or raised money and talked to me about how we would do that properly or not to do it or why to do it or who to do it with.
Yeah.
And then I turn around and I talk to somebody about how do I get in with big clients, some guy who ran an agency that serviced Chrysler for 20, you know, so it's like you have to have a great team. That's an easy one, but it's hard to put the team together sometimes.
Oh no, it totally is. And you start to get more sophisticated about how you hire. You start seeing like this person has accounts with these people. I want that action, whatever. What would you say is the last, like I said, is like a last question. What would be one of the things that you've learned along the way that maybe was a surprise? So you get in this thing, you're not looking to raise a bunch of money to get started. Like it's not the Silicon Valley startup. And then you get into the world where there are those coming at you. And now you're in this, like, now you're a competitor in this now. It's not just like you're an upstart. Like, you're in it, you're rolling 7 years deep. What are one of the big takeaway that maybe surprised you?
That's a good question.
That's why it's the last one.
Yeah, I see that. So a lot of good surprises along the way, right?
Yeah.
Surprised at... I'm at a loss for words a little bit.
No, so. It's a tough question because there's like, you are unique in this because you come into it and there's all these new people who are like super, you know, startup, raise capital, blah, blah, blah. And you're sitting there going, I don't need to do that. And then you're like, oh, this business is only a 1.5 times multiple. But now if I do this, it's a 5 times multiple. And you're in a position where like the whole picture can change. You, where you started and what you started with and what can happen down the road are very different from when you started. It's a different world. I'm just curious, as you come into this, was there something that completely shocked you about how business is done? Like,
yeah, I mean, I was surprised about the thing that has worked the best is kind of sticking to our guns of like what we really offer.
Yep.
And then being exploratory and pushing the boundaries, but not kind of getting out of the box too much.
Yep.
And I guess all the benefits that have come through that.
Yep.
One is that we have developed people and a culture of how to do this one thing so well that's somewhat intellectual property. That's kind of its own. There's value there that means that we have a process for doing this. We have all those things. So I would say the surprise is how hard it is to pry relationships in the advertising world.
Yeah.
It's so hard to get into an opportunity and to get a chance to buy media on somebody's behalf and show them why our technique is better.
Yeah.
So that's just amazingly difficult. But and I guess that surprise of how hard it is to get in, but how vast the market is.
Yeah.
How many people buy ads and want to talk about ad buying, and people that you don't expect have bought ads and run Facebook ads for, they make candles in their spare time and they run Facebook and you're like, I didn't know you made candles.
And Facebook ads.
You have an attitude about this and you have a opinion about how this works and all that stuff. So the vast size of the market, the benefit that we've had of sticking to the same message and kind of the same thing, And then just how many smart people there are in all business.
And how many dumb people there are.
There are.
But I knew that coming in.
Exactly.
That was not new to me.
That's not new to me.
Yeah, I'm very familiar.
I've had the luck of some of them work at the company now, and just that's a blessing.
The smart ones. just to be clear.
But yeah, just like I travel a decent amount. I meet a lot of people that have done this at different sizes all over the place. And a lot of smart people know what they're looking at. And they might have some agency relationship that makes no sense. But the good ones are out there doing good work. And you just got to find them.
I think the surprise for me in businesses like yours, and even your story in particular, is just how important not getting ahead of your skis and not trying to like be everything to everyone and like chase. There's like this dollars floating across like... And clients are the worst at this because they dangle the shit in front of you like, but if you would do social, would you be, and you're like, we need this deal. Bad for me. No. And I'm a victim of this all the time, and it's like pisses me off.
Tell me about your new CTV offering.
Right? Yeah.
Everybody's got a CTV offering all of a sudden. So do we. I mean, it's important, but like,
but the structure is there.
They dangle it. They're like, tell me about the CTV. I have a bunch of money to try this out.
Of course you do.
Of course you do. And just trying to find your niche and then just sticking to your guns and like not building because, you know, pivoting the company again and again. And then some people do it because they have to, right?
It's the early fight journey. This is Keith, Kevin, Steve. This has been...
Call me whatever you want.
This has been, depends. This has been a great conversation learning about this. I love, obviously, this business. And I like the stories like this. It reminds me a lot of Jason... Vandenboom from ActiveCampaign. If you're familiar with ActiveCampaign, 12 years he's toiling away, raises no money, another at $100 million and change in revenue annually.
Yeah.
And like people are trying to throw money at him,
right.
And he's just like, nah, you know,
right.
Call me when you got enough till I don't have to ever think about anything again. Then I'll take that.
Then I'll talk to you.
But this is amazing. So this is a great story. Where do people go to work with you to learn more about you? Do you write? Do you do things that people could follow you to learn? Whatever. You're a funny guy. I feel like you should have your own shit. That's enough.
We are stealthy on our social media presence, but we have a LinkedIn page for Programmatic Mechanics.
Okay.
Progmex.com, which is hilarious because that's where we started.
We need to get you.
Or Progmex.com.
Progmex, Progmex. It really depends on who at the company you ask.
Yeah, exactly.
I would go with what the CEO says just because, you know, he's an entrepreneur, founder, CEO, president, the whole thing. But yeah, seriously, you should have your own little thing.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. If you've got any questions for me or for Keith or for anyone about anything for that matter, just DM me on Instagram or on Twitter at Technori or at Katoon, and we'll get back to you as soon as you can. To apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio, which is on Saturdays from noon to 1, if you're not listening, you're missing out. It's a sweet way to invest in companies. Go to technori.com. Boom. That's a wrap.